Hi, I'm Tommaso, PhD student at Graz University of Technology.
And I'm Daniel, also a PhD student at the Graz University of Technology.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap, the physics-oriented podcast,
in which we give insights into various research topics and the life of scientists.
And by the way, if you want to contact us, you can drop a line to our email address bridgethegap@tugraz.at. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, Tommaso.
What do you know about laser?
About laser? I don't know, that it's bright?
Yeah, it's bright. This sounds like one of my jokes.
I learn from the best.
Thanks, I'm flattered. Well, do you know what laser stands for?
No, of course not.
Well, it stands for light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation.
Such a trivial name.
Yeah, right? Easy names in physics. Well, but I had the impression it will be a stimulating discussion.
You're trying to make a joke here?
Yeah. Well, I'm really, really thrilled. So thrilled to talk about this that I'm possibly highly excited.
Another amazing joke.
Thanks. What do you call a photon that tells joke?
I have no idea.
A light comedian.
Something it does not have in common with you, right?
Thanks. But why do lasers make such bad gossipers?
Ooh, that's a really tough question. I don't know.
Well, because they're so collimated, they don't spread the news.
I don't know what collimated means.
It basically means focused.
Ah, okay, now
like
it's
a laser.
Fun.
But by the way, today's topic is laser spectroscopy, and with us to discuss about it, Birgitta Schulze-Bernhardt, professor at Graz University of Technology. And really, I can't wait to hear what she has to say about it.
I'm also looking very forward, actually.
And as always, we asked our fellow students what they know about the matter, and this is what they had to say.
My guess is that is the study of spectra. What can it be used for, in my opinion, is to see what else it's hidden in the signals, for example, which other information that we could miss from just the time domain, and we can see much more in the frequency domain.
I think generally it's about what light is constructed of, like what wavelengths it's helped us deconstruct it, and it can be used for pretty much everything from like quantum stuff to astronomy.
So today we will talk about laser spectroscopy. With us to discuss about this topic, Birgitta Schulze-Bernhardt, professor at TU Graz. So Birgitta, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us about your background, your studies, your field of expertise? The stage is yours.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm a laser spectroscopist or an experimentalist in physics, I would say. And I'm originally from Bavaria, from Munich. I studied diploma physics at the Ludwig Maximilians University. And after I did some postdoctoral studies in Berkeley, back in Munich and in Jena, I'm in Graz now since, I have to count quickly, almost 6 years. And yeah, since 2022, I am a university professor. And I have a group, and we are dedicating our research to coherence sensing. So we are using lasers to find out more about light matter detection. And I guess we will talk about this today.
So could you maybe explain to us what a laser is and give us an intuitive understanding of how it works?
Oh, yeah. That's difficult, I would say, because the principle behind a laser is not at all intuitive. I would say I had difficulties to understand it myself. Okay, a laser is the name is just an abbreviation of the process that's behind it. It's it means light amplification by stimulated emission radiation, LASER. So the process behind this is stimulated emission, and this is now not at all intuitive what is happening here. So maybe it's better to start about explaining what are the main components of a laser. Okay, so one has typically an active medium, a resonator, and a pump source. So the pump source pumps the energy into the active medium. And this active medium is placed inside the laser resonator or cavity. And this cavity is in the simple geometry maybe existing only of two mirrors that are facing each other. I was wondering if I can find an example of our everyday life. Maybe you've been already in an elevator where there were two mirrors on two sides so that you could see your picture or your image again and again and again and again, because of course you have this multiple reflection. So one can say maybe this is also a kind of resonator, a bad resonator, I would say. And you would be then the active medium, because the active medium is just placed between these two mirrors. And this is pumped, as I said, by a pump source. So this active medium has a special feature. It must be at least a three-level system. And now it's getting a bit more complicated, I would say. So what's a three-level system? Okay. So if you excite any material or let light interact with a material, the light can excite electrons, for example. And this active medium can absorb the light, and the energetic structure of the potential energies that the active medium can be excited to is discrete. It's not a continuum of potential energetic levels. And this one can maybe imagine like a ladder with some rungs in between. And if the light has a certain energy, the electron can jump onto a higher rung. And in an active medium, it can be that there are already electrons on the upper levels sitting there. And if the pump energy with a certain photon energy is now exciting electrons to the same level, the two can team up, the electrons, and then they jump. And that's stimulated emission. So they team up, they jump down, and two photons are emitted at the same time, with the same color, with the same phase, and that's called coherent light. And because this happens all the time between these mirrors, a standing wave can be generated. And the next step is one of the mirrors shouldn't be 100% reflecting, but just partially transmitting, such that we have an output coupler and this coherent light is coupled out. And then finally we can make use of it and use it for an experiment. That's a long answer, sorry.
Well, that was a great answer, actually. So you talked about laser. Now you said we can use it. And before you said you were a spectroscopist, right? Mm-hmm. So what is laser spectroscopy in this sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we use the special properties of laser light, and we let it interact with a sample that we want to study in more detail. And one could study different kinds of interaction. There's, of course, diffraction, there's transmission, there's reflection, and all kinds of possibilities. In our case, we study the absorption mainly. That means we shine light onto a sample and we look what is transmitted afterwards. And out of the leftover light, the remaining light, we can understand what's going on, what kind of sample we even have. We can identify it or even look into details in this light matter interaction. And that's what we do.
And what in particular do you investigate? And are you more focused on investigating materials or on developing methods?
Mm-hmm. It's actually a combination. So we are interested in finding out more mainly about gases. This can be a simple gas species, just one molecular gas sample, but it can be also a complex gas mixture like our atmosphere. So we even study not only gases in the lab, in the laser lab, but even outside in the city of Graz.
I imagine it's not so easy to investigate something outside. I guess you don't have so much control over the conditions there.
Exactly. And this is rather challenging because in the lab, everything is controlled. You have even a nice air conditioning system, so you have stable temperature. And of course, the interaction path length is rather short on an optical table that is maybe 2 meters long or so. But we faced really interesting conditions outside. Atmospheric turbulences, for example, made out of our normally Gaussian beam that has a very nice intensity distribution, something completely ugly, and flickering. And this was quite challenging to redesign the optical geometry such that it is optimized. However, the technique that we are now developing has a great advantage. It has very short measurement times. We are measuring on the microsecond time scale. And of course, on that time scale, the fluctuations from the atmosphere, for example, are much weaker than as opposed to measuring over seconds or minutes or something, of course.
So how exactly does it work, making an experiment in plein air?
Well, it's in principle, it's the same as in the lab. In the lab, you would have a light source, a sample cell, and a detector, in principle, to be rather basic. So normally a dispersive element before your detector, because this dispersive element sends the different colors into different directions, and then you could just put a camera and look at the different colors at the same time. In our case, we are doing a special form of Fourier transform spectroscopy that doesn't need this dispersive element. That's already a bonus. But you asked me about how can we do this experiment outside. So in principle, we just shine our very weak laser outside of the window. And then we have a retroreflector somewhere on the parking lot or so that is reflecting the light back to the origin. And then there's a next to our laser source, there's a detector. And then we can detect the signal also there where we are in principle standing and recording. So that's a bit cheating, I would say, because we are still in the lab, right? So we are currently developing our portable spectrometer that is already on a wheeling cart, so we can move it already. But of course, we would like to have it. I would say currently it's mobile. We want to turn it into portable. That means that we can really carry it around and then go really to other places. But we started right at the campus Neue Technik next to the Peterskasse and found out about the NO2 concentration.
So do you have a specific application in mind, or is this more like fundamental research?
It's both, actually. So the technique that I didn't describe at all, that we are using this dual comp spectroscopy, that is a special form of Fourier transform spectroscopy, is originally coming really from fundamental research. We are using laser frequency comps. These are very special lasers that are super precise, and they have been developed for precision spectroscopy to really find out about the transition of a specific transition in hydrogen to a precision of 10 to the minus 14. Okay, so this is not at all relevant for everyday life. It's totally basic research. However, it turns out that these special lasers can be used for different applications as well. So it can make our GPS more accurate. And it is used also for astrophysics. All the telescopes can be calibrated. And then what I described you already is now an application for atmospheric sciences. We can use the lasers to measure our atmosphere in an unprecedented amount of detail, and not just only one species. The laser is generating different colors at the same time. That means we can collect information about a variety of colors in principle, and all the different species absorb different colors individually. And that means in the best case scenario would be that we can determine the different concentration ratios of oxygen, ozone, nitrogen dioxide, and all different kinds of trace gases that are around us, just with one device. Because currently the environmental agencies are having for each trace gas one detector. So these containers that you might have seen somewhere in Graz, for example, they are equipped with several detectors, and they all are from different companies, and they all have different software, and it's getting rather complex to monitor all that at the same time.
Sounds amazing. Now, you talked about this dual-com spectroscopy. This is one technique you developed in your lab, or you refined?
Well, I worked already on dual-com spectroscopy during my PhD thesis, so I contributed to the development already at that time significantly. At that time, we wanted to enhance also the... First, we wanted to prove that this is possible, similar to Fourier transform spectroscopy. And we could prove that we are 1 million times faster. So that was the first nice thing. Then in Fourier transform spectroscopy, you use incoherent light sources that can be just a light bulb, for example. But the light bulb is emitting in all directions, of course. So what you cannot do is combine it with an so-called enhancement cavity. That's also, again, a resonator with two mirrors where the light can travel back and forth 1,000 times. And if you have your sample of interest between those mirrors, you can increase your amount of interaction, of course, a lot. And this is not possible with a traditional Fourier transform spectrometer because of the light source. If you take a laser, of course, it's directed, doesn't have a large beam divergence. And we showed at that time that we could enhance this interaction path length to 1 kilometer in a cell that was 30 centimeters long, for example, with at the same time microseconds of measurement time. So this was rather groundbreaking. And at that time, these lasers that we use, these frequency comps, were emitting only in the near-infrared region. This is an interesting region if you want to identify your samples, because there are rotational and vibrational transitions that you can use for the identification. However, at that time, I thought it would be interesting to go to rather unexplored spectral ranges like the ultraviolet spectral region. There's no laser emitting in the UV directly yet, so it's a bit complicated to get to that region. But it's interesting because electron dynamics happen in the UV. That means if we do now light-matter interaction with light in the UV, we can access the electron dynamics. And this is super interesting because there are all photochemical reactions involve or start with a electron excitation, like photodissociation of NO2 triggers a process that is one of the most important ones in our atmosphere. I'm always coming back to the atmosphere because I think it is super exciting. And this is nice because now we are at the point here at the Technical University in Graz where we exploit all the benefits of dual-com spectroscopy in the UV. That means this short time scales, the lasers emit these many colors, many UV colors in that sense then. And we have this very high spectral resolution. That means one can imagine it like a high-definition TV movie that we try to generate, seeing super nice colors with all kinds of shadings with a very high definition. That means high spectral resolution and in a very short amount of time, because we do snapshots of the potential excitations that can happen. And which excitations are these? Electronic, rotational, and vibrational. And we showed this, that this is possible with just one single shot measurement.
This method sounds very impressive. So I'm wondering, does it also have any drawbacks? And do you know how many other labs use it currently?
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't count the labs, but the number is increasing, actually. There is also a drawback, I must say. So there are a lot of international groups working on it. And I'm rather proud that I wasn't the only one to identify that the UV spectral region is interesting, for example. just in the last a bit more than 1 year, maybe 15 to 20 months, there have been almost 10 publications from different groups only on ultraviolet dual comb spectroscopy. I think that proves that this method is super exciting. And yeah, there's a kind of race in principle who develops the technique further for different kinds of applications, actually. However, there is the drawback that you, in principle, it's a dual comb system. That means, as the name indicates, you always need two lasers. That makes it expensive, you can say. And you need a lot of expertise in aligning and analyzing the data, because you record a time domain signal and you need to take the Fourier transform. And of course, there are some tricks how to extract your signal in the best way. But the good news is that there are now recent developments where these two lasers are combined in one laser resonator. And since 10 months, we have such a laser system, and it's working so nicely. And we have extraordinary nice results on formaldehyde, which is also a major pollution gas that is really problematic, especially in cities that have a smog problem, for example. And we are able to detect this now in a super fast manner. And we've detected transitions that have never been observed experimentally before, with a device that is doesn't need any active stabilization.
What do you mean?
So the trick with this frequency comms is you can make any femtosecond pulsed laser into a frequency comb if you stabilize the cavity length, so this laser resonator, and if you make sure that each pulse that is emitted has a certain phase to the one that came before. That's the phase in principle. And if you stabilize those two parameters, you have your frequency comp. However, it's difficult to do, especially the second one. And you need a lot of electronics for it. And especially if you want to go outside, you don't want to carry around two racks of electronics with you. And this is so nice that this new laser, it's a blue shoebox in principle. That's such that you can imagine the size.
Yeah.
And it comes along with another box with the electronics that is twice that volume maybe. But then in principle, the other thing that you need is your computer with a good detector card that is your oscilloscope. It just has to be fast. That's all. And then you need some post-processing algorithm, but this is maybe going beyond this, but this is nice. So that's, it's working super nice.
So how does it feel when you put so much effort into this and you get so really nice results out of this?
Yeah, I'm smiling.
From ear to ear.
Yeah, exactly. From ear to ear for weeks, I would say. We've written a manuscript about this, and it's already on the archive. So we know about this for months, how nice it works, but I'm still super excited about it. And I can't wait to see the next sample, for example, or a mixture, and find out what else we can do with that nice new laser toy.
Mm-hmm. So what are the challenges you see in front of you now? Because now you hint at some of them, but what do you expect to research on, for example?
Well, I had a lot of fun recently in leaving the field of fundamental science and go towards more really interdisciplinary interaction with people from atmospheric sciences. So we are working together with Boko Viana, for example, with Harald Rieder and his group. And I learned so much about atmospheric sciences. And the great thing about this dual comb spectroscopy method is that, well, behind it, it's just an interferometric principle that can be used also in different fields. And so far, we just talked about absorption, Okay. We can also let it interact with a Raman active sample and do Raman spectroscopy, which is a nice tool for biophysics and medicine. So we can go towards that direction as well. If we combine it with a microscope, then we have for each pixel, for example, of our picture of the biosample, a Raman spectrum, which in turn means a lot of data that we would need to handle. So this is the next thing. That is one of the challenges we get with our lasers that have a repetition rate in the gigahertz region. We get fast gigabytes of data, and we would need to have algorithms to identify the Raman peaks automatically and things like this. So this is also a big data issue that we need to tackle. And so what I, within the ERC starting grant that is currently still going, the ultimate goal was to go even to the extreme ultraviolet spectral region. And this is the other challenge, I would say. It's very hard to get to the range because you need highly nonlinear processes to get to that point, and that means high intensities. And the frequency comms come along with high repetition rates. That's a contradiction, unfortunately. So we are currently working on the compromise between high pulse energies and high repetition rates. And I can't wait to solve that problem in the lab.
Is there something we didn't mention that you'd like to talk about? Maybe we didn't have time, or maybe we simply didn't think about it so far. You'd like to add something?
I think because it's an audio podcast, I think one big thing is missing: the beauty of laser spectroscopy.
That's true.
So that means you haven't gotten the chance to imagine, of course, or you could only imagine how beautiful it could look like in a laser laboratory. So I would like to invite you to visit at least our webpage. That's the Coherent Sensing Group of the Institute of Experimental Physics at the TU Graz. And even better would be to come visit us. And maybe there's soon a Tag der offenen Tür, for example. Or if you're a student at our university, you can contact me and then we can. We are always arranging some lab tours several times a year, and then you could just join and have a look yourself.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Birgitta, and see you next time. Thanks for listening.
And hear you next time.
Ah, and by the way,
if you want to contact us, just send a mail to bridgethegap@tugraz.at.